And I think it was on Fox Sports Radio. Somebody posed the question of who is a more damaging person ultimately, Tim Donaghy or Michael Vick, in terms of their actions. And the way that I would kind of break, and I think one of the hosts said this, if I can remember correctly, and I can't remember which one it was, and I can't say it any better than they did. Tim Donaghy's a more harmful person to sports. What the damage that he has done to basketball is going to take a long time to repair, if ever. But in terms of society, if you come at this from the point of view that ultimately sports have their place in the world, but aren't the most important thing in the world, and they're not as important as what goes on in society, I think you have to say Michael Vick and just everything. That continuing to perpetuate this culture that he does of where, and again, not to sound like a PETA person, but where basically animals are pretty much worthless, and this whole notion that animals are only to be used for human entertainment. And again, I'm not somebody who's a PETA member by any stretch of the imagination. I know that Burrell kind of spoke kind of dismissively of that part of it earlier in the show, too. But I am somebody who thinks it's a pretty grave sin to go around sort of cavalierly inflicting harm on any creature out there. I don't think animals are sacred. I eat meat every day, and pretty proudly, and I expect to continue to do so. But I think to just make to treat animals in that kind of a way, and I got into a little bit of a debate last Monday night with my good friend Bob Glassman. By the way, listen to his show tomorrow night, The Truth Hurts with Bob Glassman, 7 to 8 Eastern Time, Monday nights on SportsTalkCleveland.com, when he said, well, these are only pit bulls and they're vicious animals. And I said, Bob, they're bred to be more vicious. You wouldn't want to take one of these things in their natural state and set it down right next to a baby or substitute it for a poodle.
Well, I get that.
But they're made more vicious, Jason. They're trained. They're made bloodthirsty. These people take an already wolf-like tendency and just crank it to the nth degree.
You know, we're going way farther than we probably should here.
Okay.
Being someone who grew up in that general tri-state area where dogfighting is as accepted as smoking marijuana or underage drinking or anything of that nature, where people just go, eh, everybody's done it. I grew up in a place where it was no big deal. It was like, are you going to go to the movies? You going to go to the football game? Or you want to go watch a dogfight? I never chose the dogfight because I just figured it was never something I'd be into. But it wasn't. It's not revered in those parts as horrific as it is nationally right now. That's one. Two, the best man in my wedding coming up here has a pit bull. And she plays with his 9-month-old baby. Pit bulls are not naturally aggressive. They're not born into this world and just automatically want to destroy anything in its path. As you said, they're trained a certain way. And to take it a step further, and I'm sure that some of these details will come out later, pit bulls, which are predominantly the dog of choice in dog fighting, it's not their makeup that causes the fight. It's what the trainers are doing to the dog pre-fight. Imagine this. Imagine you were doing a horse race, and you covered a horse's tail with gasoline, and you lit it on fire a second before you opened the gate. What's going to happen? That horse is going to jump out of that gate like nothing you've ever seen before. Rick, have you ever smelled smelling salts? When you're sober, when you're straight, and you're not hurt?
I don't think I have.
It's the most repulsive smelling thing that you could ever imagine. So what they do is when they're holding the dog, if you've ever seen a fight, they hold the dog by his mouth. Everything's okay. Fine. That dog shows no ill will to the other dog. They don't really care. But they take the smelling salt while the dog is perfectly fine and basically force it to breathe that stuff in over and over again so that when you release your hand, the dog gets the hell out of Dodge and the other dog's doing the same thing, thus creating this this barrier where that dog can't get by because the other one's in its way. That starts the fight.
Okay.
And that's one example of many different things. You know, they'll continually scratch the dog's hind leg with a fingernail that's grown a certain way so that the dog is getting cut repeatedly.
Okay.
Just enough that it's annoying. So I really hate the fact that pit bulls get a bad rap. Now, granted, I don't want one and wouldn't have any around my family, but the point is these dogs are not doing it on their own, okay? The people that are doing this are the ones at fault, and clearly this whole thing is much more negatively viewed in about 47 to 48 states more intently than it is the states in which they reside in, that being the Virginias and Maryland that I know of. I spoke to a friend of mine that still lives there and said, have you heard about this? And his whole thing was, yeah, I know it sucks, but it's just dog fighting. They're making it sound like, you know, like someone assassinated the president. But to come back, and I'll let you wrap this up, but to come back to the original thought of what's worse, maybe it's a little bit of that, and I'm not trying to downplay the animal cruelty because it is messed up. I don't condone it. I don't support it in any way. But, I mean, I think of it like this. Is Pete Rose not considered one of the worst human beings in the history of sport as far as what he did?
To whatever degree, I guess. Yeah, I mean, as far as crimes against the sport, I guess so.
As far as
a bad person, I don't think people really put him up there with Ty Cobb and some of the notorious racists and everything like that. I guess it depends on the lens you look at it in. Crimes against the sport, yes. I don't know that in terms of worst guy ever. He's a personable guy. He's a guy who basically, I think, likes other people and is charming. And so it depends on the lens you're looking at it through, I think.
Well, and I guess what I'm getting at here is if anybody, including the major sports league that he played for so many years, looks at him as being the hugest violator of anything they've ever seen, in that he bet on baseball, and I don't want to confuse the facts, but as a manager on supposedly, allegedly, games that he wasn't involved in, that's the worst crime that baseball's ever seen. As a sin on the sport. And then you look at basketball, and not only do you have a guy betting on games, but betting on games that he worked, and betting on games that he turned the outcome on. I find it hard to believe that anyone's ever done anything worse than that. Because unlike Rose, this is directly affecting the outcome of the game. And they'll say that he was just shaving points, but who's to say that that's all it was? So there's that one side of it. And unlike Rose, this guy has no claim to fame that I'm aware of, like the all-time hits mark. So to me, one thing is a professional athlete who's probably heralded a little too high above the results he rendered on the field anyway. And trying to make a big deal out of this, and people saying, oh, but he's doing it to cute little animals. On a human side, it's Michael Vick. On the world and what it means for little boys and girls everywhere and family types and people to people, it's Michael Vick hands down. As it is exclusively to sport, I think it's the ref, without a shadow of a doubt, because he directly affected the outcome of the game. Michael Vick, electrocuting dogs who didn't win in dogfights, did not directly affect the outcome of a game. So it all depends on, again, what lens you're looking through.
Very, very well said, and I don't think anybody could challenge what you said there, because what Donahue did is certainly the thing way more damaging to sport. The thing with Michael Vick, though, this is what I would just wonder about. And in terms of the thought process, and by the way, before we get any further on that, I'm glad you brought up and talked about your familiarity with dogfighting. Again, these are perspectives a lot of times we don't get to hear as much in the media. So you have some familiarity, more than I was even aware of when we raised this here tonight. I'm glad you brought that out. You give people something else to think about. As far as it goes with Vic, though, and I don't know if there was a concern that something could be traceable, but here's my way. My first thought on this, again, and as I said earlier tonight, the fact that I was so enraged to hear Michael Vick plead not guilty that it moved me to think we should change the Constitution in this country, a lot of thoughts I get are of a knee-jerk fashion. My knee-jerk thought when I thought about disposing of the dogs here, and maybe this comes from watching the Simpsons pilot with Santa's Little Helper, where they took the dog home from the Greyhound track, why the hell not, if they have these dogs and they want to get rid of them, Why are they not, say, dropping them off right outside the dog pound or whatever? Why are they not disposing of them? Are they afraid of it getting traced back to them? My thought was, why is that necessary? Why is it necessary to kill the dogs? Now, it sounds to me like they're getting off on it. Like, maybe there's a sadistic streak here. If you're body slamming them, if you're electrocuting them, maybe you're just so far gone that you enjoy it. But I don't know. My first thought is, you know, there's ways to get rid of dogs that don't involve killing them. Maybe it's just me.
Well, and this is one of those things where I guess the judge or the jury will really play in. If it's found to be factually supported that they were doing that and he knew about it or whatever, that appeals to the inhumane nature. I mean, that's torture to some degree. And again, my experience being very limited from a third-person perspective on the outside, never really even watching it, I can tell you this, just from word of mouth and what the stories that I had heard that traveled through town, if you will. Generally, when a dog who was engaged in dog fights got to the point where it was no longer winning, there was never a reason to kill the dog. Right. The guys that I rubbed elbows with in regards to this topic would tell you that they treated their dogs just like any other pro athlete, like a championship horse. You know, mm-hmm. If a horse gets hurt or is beyond the age where they can legitimately be expected to compete, they will take that animal and they will retire it, if you will. Not mm-hmm. kill it.
Right.
That dog then becomes a house dog, or that dog then, you know, has a doghouse in the back and is chained within a fence or something like that, but gets to enjoy the rest of its life as a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely, any question about the means in which the dogs were disposed of appeals to an entirely different level of circumstances that are not even necessary, even within the realm of the dog fighting community.
Right. And that's, you know, that just seemed to be one more sick angle to the whole story here, too. And it was just, I think, the thing that just is infuriating people the most. And it just infuriates me to hear people minimize the whole thing here as though this is some kind of persecution of Michael Vick. And there's a lot of, I think it's safe to say, racially motivated defense of Michael Vick. As far as, there's no other reason to get behind the guy. But when you're looking at, say, talk show callers or whatever the case may be, where the support is coming from, it's just sad that it has to break down on racial lines like that to where you have to be a knee-jerk supporter of the guy because he's a fellow brother. But I guess that's the way it goes in this country.
Well, that's just one of those topics that you and I would probably never understand no matter who we're talking about. And I agree with you. I don't see why you get behind the guy. And this coming from a person who's generally more inclined to wait until the trial actually runs its course before I even say anything about it. But look, the bottom line here is Michael Vick has pissed off a lot of people. And I'm talking about the people that have been doing this for decades. The people that have been hosting dog fights in their backyard or in their basement for years
mm-hmm.
really thought they had something here. They had something that they could enjoy, that they could do, and they had kind of unwritten rules about it, and no one ever knew about it. It was you. It's kind of like the movie Fight Club. If you were in, great. If you weren't, you know, you were none the wiser for it. It wasn't the kind of thing that was out in the open, and now it is. And now you've got organizations like PETA and whoever else are going to come to the forefront and say, this absolutely can't happen under any circumstances. So, yeah, he's pissed off every person who's ever had a dog as a pet, anyone who's ever observed animals from afar, from the cruelty perspective. And he's got a lot of people who, and I don't want to make it sound like dog fighting is respectable because it's not, but there were certain parameters to it. You know, the dogs were well cared for. They weren't killed. They were mistreated. There's no getting around that. But it's a different animal than it is through the eyes of the national perspective, care of Michael Vick.
Well, again, there's a lot of things I think that make this so just nauseating to so many people out there, and just such a blight on the NFL. And I think the NFL is going to be very glad to put Michael Vick behind itself, and it already seems to be in the process of doing
that. The real question we've yet to address here is, even if there's an O.J. Simpson situation, and they come back after all this and say, well, we just didn't have enough, and we got nothing at this point. Even if he could play game one, do you really think Michael Vick will ever really play? What team is going to want to take on that PR that goes with signing Michael Vick to a deal when this is all over with? Because it's not going to be the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
I personally believe that too much has gone by and too much has already happened. The city of Atlanta is damn near split 50-50. You might as well just brush that under the rug and say, you know what, we're moving on. Michael Vick or no Michael Vick, no matter how good he is with his feet. If you were an owner, would you ever sign a player like Michael Vick after something like this?
Nope. Too much of a freak show. And he had other problems that have gone on before this as well. And not a very well-adjusted guy. And that's all you can say. But just the problems that he had, his spoiled sense of entitlement that he has had throughout his career, and a guy who's just been a little too used to having his ass kissed because of his superhuman physical gifts. And he's finding out that the superhuman physical gifts aren't going to have to save you in a court of law when it comes down to this.
You know, the funny thing is,
don't care about that.
If you step away from the details of it, the funny thing is, it seems like Marcus Vick and Michael Vick are indeed cut from the same cloth. It's just that Michael was better at getting away with it for a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently Marcus didn't learn how to kind of keep things under wraps, and he was getting busted from day one. Now, oddly enough, Marcus Vick gets in trouble for possession of marijuana and underage drinking, which, you know, combined don't add up to what Michael's under.
Yep. Michael was the one that was kayfabing all this time here. We thought he was the responsible brother compared to Marcus, but little did we know.